Psalm 34, verse 7. The angel of the Lord encampeth round about them that fear him, and delivereth them. You know where David was when he wrote this psalm? Well, I know what the heading says. He had just disgraced himself, feigning madness, letting spittle running down over his chin, fleeing from the hand of Saul. But the best scholarship places this psalm when he was at the cave of Adullam. What a wonderful thing had happened to him. The Lord had wrecked his life by choosing him. When the prophet came to anoint the king to succeed Saul, David was out in the fields. They didn't even think he was a candidate. And as all the sons of Jesse paraded by, Samuel said, "There must be another one." In came David. This is God's choice. What a wonderful thing happens to you when you are the recipient of God's choosing. And you notice, wasn't the Philistines that were the problem? Wasn't the sinning world out there that was the problem? God's people settled on their lease were the problem. And if there's anything God's people can't stand, once they are backslidden and presumptuous and using the things of God for their own purposes, is somebody truly chosen of God. Let that settle in a while. But be that as it may, that's a sermon all by itself. I'll skip over that. God's choice produced a marvelous set of circumstances for David. Everybody wanted to kill him. Now, I'm driven by God these first few weeks of the year to get back to some fundamentals that can guide us throughout the year. Well, I thought if God chooses you, things get better. Cheer up, saints. It's going to get worse. God's anointing made David the target. And God wasn't doing a damn thing about it. God's choice, everything, went wrong. David sits there and says, "I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise shall continually be in my mouth." For what? Get in that cave with him. And it says at the cave of Adullam, everybody that was in need, everybody that was in distress, everybody that was discontented, everybody that was in debt, they gathered themselves unto him. One of the things I like about God's choice is the kind of people that agree with him. Fascinating thing about being called of God and chosen of God, the kind of people it attracts. Once you're called of God, you really get a gang around you. Those in debt, those discontented, those in distress. Inductively, I could conclude today, looking you over, that I'm really called of God. You all looked the part on this January day. Cave, the lions roaring around because they existed in those days in that land, with this band gathered around him, saying, you're the call of God now. Take care of us. Discontented, distressed, and in debt. Oh, magnify the Lord with me, and let us exalt his name together. Why? Look at verse 10. The young lions do lack and suffer hunger, but they that seek the Lord shall not want any good thing. Look at verse 8. Oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man that trusteth in him. And the angel of the Lord encampeth round about them that fear him and delivereth them. You say, where is he going? All that matters is that I get there. And I'm going to get there today. This is a young David. This is the David revealing again and again why God picked him. But David had that remarkable ability, and it reeks out of his Psalms, to be as human as any one of us and to react to the circumstance with the same extremes of emotion and realistic appraisal of circumstance that you and I have, but he had a never-changing ability to take his eyes past the circumstance to that invisible realm to which his faith would flee, as he used to use the word, which meant, when translated trust, as I've said so often, to run to the shelter of a rock. He had that ability to, with his mouth in these Psalms, change the circumstance by introducing onto the scene that other reality. Now, I started teaching this past week one of those passages of Scripture that if God is at all, and if when he says something, he's not a man to lie, nor the son of man to repent, but what he says he'll do, and what he speaks he'll make good, he has, so to speak, put his foot in his mouth, or he has to deliver. In fact, what I preach this week is better than tithing, because tithing you've got to keep doing. But this first fruits thing is sort of one of those things that you can get up for and get it over with. And I've had people call saying they'd even forgotten the passages. That if you give the first fruits, particularly the first of the first fruits to the Lord, he promises to send his angel in front of you. Right? Now, I'm building on that. And you that didn't have the courage to give first fruits offerings and already spending that is the first fruits of the year, you're doomed anyway. No angel help available for you in this context, so I'm not preaching to you. But I got some good news for those of you that gave the first fruits offering. Of course, you could still get in on it on your way out. I want to talk about this angelic help. Now, once every year, I preach on the basis for my faith, which is the resurrection. And you that have heard that message know that once you cross that hurdle, the rest comes easy. I believe in angels. I sure believe in the bad ones, the ones that fell. I meet them every day. But I think it's time from this pulpit we talk about what's available to the saint of God in angelic presence. Now, everything that's good that comes from God as a result of His promises, you must claim by activated faith. And the tragedy is that this help has been available to a lot of people, and you just haven't turned the faith loose to claim it. I want the devil and the world out there to know, as we go into 1988, twice the number 8, which means new beginning, 2 times being the adequate witness, that it ain't the old same old crowd that the devil and the world have to contend with. I want my enemies to know that I'm just beginning to tap the arsenal of weaponry. Up till now, they haven't even been in a fight. Because your pastor is beginning to understand there are resources available that we can tap. Cheer up, saints. It's going to get worse for the enemy. Because when I say cheer up, saints, it's going to get worse, that's worse in the sense that the devil's going to pour it on and his cohorts are going to pour it on. And the Bible shows that the more mature the saint, the tougher the test. And the promise of God is, that whom the Lord loveth, he traineth. That's the word that's translated chasten. Paideia is the word in the Greek. It means the child train. Having the meaning carried with it, you progressively develop them, which is to say you don't make them run around a track 15 times before you make them run around once, which is another way of saying you get them toughened for what lies ahead. Now, it's going to get worse, as I preached last Sunday, in the plan of God, because He's developing us to rule and reign with Him throughout eternity. But it's going to get worse as part of God's plan to toughen and develop us. And it's going to get worse. That is, the tougher circumstance requires a tougher person to go through it. But the person that's really going to have to suffer the worst is the loser in that tougher circumstance that we toughened ones go through. So cheer up, saints. It's going to get worse for the enemy. You got that? Now, he looked at those snaggletooth, bad breath, deaded, discontented, beaten down band of people that had gathered to him because he was God's called ones, and he saw those hypocrites, abandoned of God, asinine, self-serving in the name of God, arrogant idiots, having all the power, and he was driven to a cave. But he looked beyond that circumstance and saw the promise of God, and he said, the angel of the Lord. Who's he talking about? The one who stood with drawn sword when Joshua came into that promised land. The captain of the Lord's host. The one who said to Abram, stay thy hand. And delivered his son Isaac. The one through all the pages of God's book.
that can do it by himself. The one who killed 180,000 one night. Sennacherib's army. Doesn't take many angels. Pretty fast, too, you know, one of them. An angel of the Lord. Some people try to translate this verse in the plural, but it's not in the plural. Because they couldn't figure out anything but angels couldn't tamper around. Now, one old prophet had a servant with him who saw the enemy camped on the hills and was scared spitless. And the prophet said, "Lord, open his eyes." And the scales fell from his eyes and he saw the hosts of God's army, unseen with natural eye, camped around. Some people try to translate this verse that way. But the literal has it in the singular. One's enough. If it's a host, that's fine with me, but one's enough, and man can he move and camp round about them that fear him and delivereth them. I'm going to beat this simple little subject to death before I go to what the purpose of the message is. What does he do? Huh? Delivereth them. That means he doesn't prevent you're getting into the mess. He doesn't keep you out of the valley, to hark back to last Sunday. That means he doesn't put you in a position that is exempt from all fear, exempt from all pressure, exempt from all problems, exempt from that which requires deliverance. By the very nature of the promise, you're in that which you need to be delivered from or through. Cheer up, saints. It's going to get worse because you're going to get into spots in 1988 from which you need fat cats for Jesus never need deliverance. Those that can only build churches with $23 million in hand never need deliverance. Comprenez-vous?
Yes, sir.
Oui, oui. Told you I want to beat this to death before I go down the trail a bit, because I have a specific endpoint for this message, something that seldom happens when I preach. I can't remember when I preached a message that had an ending point. But I have one today. But I want you to walk right with me down into that cave, no electric heating, lions roaring, surrounded by those that always respond to God's choice, gloom, despair, and agony on me. That's what happens to people that join God's plan. I preached that last Sunday, weren't you here? God's people are forever getting into situations from which they need deliverance. How many qualify? But the promise of God is, the angel of the Lord encampeth round about them that fear him, and what? Deliver them. That was written when David was in the cave of Adullam, and he saw past the stuff of the circumstance, and as a fresh young man of faith, His songs, called Psalms, reek with it. He trusted his Lord. Another occasion he could say, what time I am afraid, I will trust in the Lord, run to him for my help and aid. And sure enough, God delivered him. You know the story. Saul fell on his own sword, committed suicide. Oh, Lord, let it happen to my enemy. Now, sure enough, God's angel came through. He got out of the cave. That bunch of snaggletroots, distressed, discontented, deaded people actually go into the catalog as the mighty men. In companies of hundreds, in companies of 30s, and three of them become heroes that the record in God's book says everybody else didn't attain under the first three. One crawled into a pit of snow and fought and won against a lion. Another one stood in a barley field and held off the enemy until they had to pry his fingers from the hilt of the sword. Three. Only heard a whisper from David that I might have water from the well at Bethlehem. And at risk of life, they went and got it. What a change. He sat on the throne of God and had the prophet come and say to him, I was with thee, took thee from the sheepcot, from following the sheep, to be ruler over my people Israel. Was with thee whithersoever thou wentest, cut off all thine enemies from out of thy sight. As the prophet Nathan gave him this prophecy in later years, made of thee a name which is like unto the name of the great men that are in the earth, and will make of thy house a dynasty that will never be toppled. As long as the stars and the sun and the moon shine in the heavens, your seed will sit on a throne over Israel. Therefore, if I'd had that happen to me, I could sit down after the fact and write this too. The angel of the Lord encampeth round about them that fear him and delivereth them. But he didn't write it after the fact. He wrote it before the fact. And did the Lord come through? That's the question I'm walking you through. Did the Lord come through? Huh? Saul is dead. David's on the throne. Prophet establishes his dynasty forever. He even gets embarrassed. Because his house is better than God's house. The angel came through. Right?
Yes, sir.
And from his marvelous palace throne of having given God the chance to show he keeps his word, he could sit there and say, look at me, I've arrived. Huh? Angels never let you down. Got that? How many of you have been delivered by the angel of the Lord? Your past, somewhere in your lifetime, you've had God deliver you out of a problem. Up with your hand high. Thank God you don't need any more messages. You know the truth, and the truth has set you free. Sit there on your throne. And rejoice. God needed to show off through you. And having done it, safe, sweet, and secure, join a fundamentalist church. You don't have any problems the rest of your life. Huh? I believe, when I read the Psalms, I believe David has paid all the price he needed to pay for God's choice. All those years grubbing around in caves. I mean, all God had to do was anoint him and pick him for everything to get messed up and give the guy credit. He didn't let the circumstance get him down. He looked past the problem and he claimed in faith, "The angel of the Lord encampeth round about them that fear him and delivereth him." Now he could sit on his throne and say, "I told you so. What a said. The angel delivered me." Once you learn that lesson, you don't need any more experience with it. Second Samuel. You may say, "Where in the hell is he going?" Nowhere in hell. In the King James, to 2 Samuel. Not 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel. Page 390. Had God put David on the throne and taken him from the cave and established his throne as long as there was a sun and a moon in the sky and the stars in the heavens, his throne would stand. And not only put him on the throne, took him from the cave, he promised it would be forever. One of his own household, Absalom. Notice that there were people at the gate wanting to talk to David, and David was king over the land, very busy. So Absalom went and parked himself at the gate. He said, "It's not good that the king isn't here to hear your problem. Tell me your problem. You need somebody to listen to you." Absalom became the first counseling pastor. "Tell me your problem." And he won the hearts of the people away from God's choice. Now, here's David out here. He's a shepherd. Not bothering anybody. Protecting his sheep and killing a bear and a lion that come around. And God chose him. And all hell broke loose on him. But he keeps his faith through it all. And God puts him on a throne. And now chooses him to be a perpetual source of dynasty. Not just chosen to be king over Israel, but his house is going to rule as long as there's sun, moon, and star in the sky. And here comes Absalom, winning the hearts of the people. This is the longest simple sermon I've ever preached, because it's very simple. Everything's going to go to a final statement I want to drive home. And Absalom won the hearts of the people, and here goes David fleeing. Oh, you ought to hear what happens as he flees from Jerusalem. Let's go back to the 16th chapter and get a picture of this giant of God, and it's not going to have any meaning to you today until you look on this man as the same man who wrote so many psalms, of which the 34th psalm was one, who had done nothing but dare to believe God, and God chose him to be king, and then something happened again to pull it down. Had done nothing but receive God's choice on his life and responded, and then all hell breaks loose on him. But the cave doesn't break his faith. The circumstance doesn't break his faith. He still can look through the stuff of his problem and see the unseen angel of the Lord and claim the promise, the angel of the Lord encampeth round about them that fear him and delivereth them. And sure enough, he hung on long enough and he got deliverance. And he's a faithful king through the years. And God comes and makes another promise. I mean, I can just see him. Folks, I'm your king now. And this is what God has said. Boom, kablooey, boom, boom. The minute that God gives the promise, gloom, despair, and agony on me. I wonder if after 12 years I'm going to get this message across. Everything went wrong. The exalted of God goes out of the city in the 16th chapter. It says in the 5th verse, when King David came to Bahurim, behold, thence came out a man of the family of the house of Saul. And we have people from Bahurim on the phones every night. This afternoon when they get on the telephones, the few voices of faith say, are you from Bahurim? And hang up on them. When King David came to Bahurim, behold, thence came out a man of the family of the house of Saul, whose name was Shimei, the son of Gera. He came forth and cursed still as he came. And he cast stones at David, and at all the servants of King David, and all the people, and all the mighty men were on the right hand and on the left. And thus said Shimei when he cursed, come out, thou bloody man, thou man of Belial. The Lord hath returned upon thee all the blood of the house of Saul, in whose stead thou hast reigned. And the Lord hath delivered the kingdom into the hand of Absalom thy son. And behold, thou art taken in thy mischief, because thou art a bloody man. You know who this wart's talking to? Huh? The one that God chose, put on his throne, said his kingdom would be as long as the sun, the moon, the stars shone. No wonder. Then said Abishai, one of those mighty men, the son of Zeruiah, unto the king, why should this dead dog curse my lord the king? Let me go, I pray thee, take off his head. God said, stick him. I like that guy. All the Abishais in Los Angeles, welcome my church. I want them all. Headhunters for Jesus. Now, people commend David for the following. I think he was just beaten down. I think he's wrong. Frankly, I think he's dead wrong. And the king said, what have I to do with you, ye sons of Zeruiah? So let him curse, because the Lord has said unto him, curse David, who shall then say, wherefore hast thou done so? Let him curse. I don't find anywhere in that record that it says God told him to curse. David was so beaten down, he was a little too spiritual. I'd have said to Abishai, sick him. At least one head can roll on our way out. A lot of things are in God's book, not necessarily God's will. I'm not convinced that David was anywhere close to knowing the mind of God at that moment. Nehemiah, in the peak of his power with God, said, "Should such a man as I flee?" And he's winning his victory by having a guy lie for him, too. Go ahead and read the chapter. Next one. Hushai is a plant. And Absalom's court lying for him. Well, I'm not convinced that David was that tuned in to "Thus saith the word of the Lord." Well, then what's the point you're making, Scott? You never get too old to be human. Got that? You never progress on this journey far enough that the old man would mind this crazy Mike today. I saw you. You got your hands in your pockets. You're playing it safe. Take them out of your pocket and turn it down a little. I don't know what happened, but when I walked over here, but Mick, what are you doing over there by that speaker, Mick? I'm going to show you eventually what David did that was right. I'm not convinced telling Abishai, "Let him alone, let him curse." A little faith would have been better than a little humility. Got that? It's amazing how people that are full of weakness and full of sin, that are delivered by God because of their faith, once they get to the point of deliverance, they get spiritual and righteous and lose faith. You got that message? I have analyzed myself the last year. I've been so damn spiritual, I make myself sick. I once was lost in sin, and now I am again. Woo-hoo! All I had to know throughout my best years was that God was leading, and I didn't really give a good two hoots. I'd lower my head and fade and charge. I, in fact, have gotten sick enough to even be nice on occasion. And sit around in the cave of Adullam and say, "Lord, what did I do to get myself here?" My best years used to scare you spitless, Dad. I still have visions indelibly in my brain of the look on your face a few times when I would take a Bible and throw it at the roof. I have decided I'd rather be dead than be as nice as I've been for the last year. Point you're making. David wasn't all that nice when he was younger, but he had faith in God's word, and he would let nothing take his eyes off God's promise. That's what I was trying to preach to you last Sunday. The way you camp in a valley of weeping because the devil will get on your shoulder, and man, can he make you guilty. You're to blame for what happened. Oh, man, can he make you feel sorry for yourself if you're an innocent victim? I'm trying to tell you this faith walk. Remember when I came to town 12 years ago? I looked at this little piddling congregation when I could find one between the rows of seats. And I'd say, you have beat on yourself for your mistake long enough. Remember when I said there ain't nobody going to be able to beat on this congregation anymore? Get your head up and get some faith. How many remember that? What few of you left? No, I didn't come preaching perfection. I came preaching faith. Remember that? You know, in my earlier years of ministry, God had to catch me to put any righteousness on me. I was so busy faithing that the mold wouldn't set for righteousness. I mean, you got to fixate a while to be perfected the way the fundamentalists want you. You got to just sort of lay back and let them cut on you a while. Shape you. Now David, sitting on his throne, suddenly, boy, and God and the devil, I believe, not just the devil, I think God and the devil knew how to get to him. Absalom, the darling of his life. The one that would never turn on him. You know, we have these little territories with God. We can put up with God letting something go wrong in any area but here. That's the one area God himself better not touch. And he has the dangest way about him. He gets right there where that thing is. And David fled. And Abishai and the people are following him. And here's this dad-blasted Shimei cursing him and elevating Saul. And Abishai following him. David said, let me out of him. I'll cut his frickin' head off. You got to listen very closely around here. You all heard it, did you? Yeah. David said, no, the Lord gave him his cursing. You know that's not true. There's no way in God's earth that God would put the cursing in the mouth of that Shimei. He didn't need help from God to curse. That old martyr, David, he's better at being righteous now than he is faithing. But here's the message. I told you I was coming to an end point. Because I have an idea that some of you that have been around a while, kind of like David, we get to a point where we have fought enough battles in faith, it shouldn't be called upon us to have a go at it anymore. We are graduate students for God. And when things go wrong in our life, we got to find some special spiritual purpose for it. It isn't sufficient anymore to just be led of God and get up each day and all the problems surround, and by faith you expect it and say, the angel of the Lord encamps round about them that fear him and delivereth them out of them all. We're graduate students. Got to be more to it than that. That's why fresh young troops, with all their mistakes, are more exciting to be around. You over-taught bunch of deadheads. Oh, you know everything. And you've come so far down this trail, you have to go back to basics. You need something more profound. Then the angel of the Lord encampeth round about them that fear him, and delivereth them. I mean, I've heard for 12 years that message. Give me something new. Tell me who the whore is. Got you there, didn't I? Everything's coming to this point. Get ready now. Verse 27, 2 Samuel 17. And it came to pass, when David was come to Mahanaim, that Shobai, the son of Nahash, of Rabbah, of the children of Ammon, and Machir the son of Amiel of Lodabar, and Barzillai the Gileadite of Rogelim, wrought beds and basins and earthen vessels and wheat and barley and flour and parched corn, beans and lentils and parched pulse and honey and butter and sheep and cheese of the kind for David and for the people who were with him to eat. For they said, the people is hungry and weary and thirsty in the wilderness. And David numbered the people who were with him and set captains of thousands and captains of hundreds over them. Ain't that something? David at Adullam, where I started, had a little bitty band of people in debt, in discontent, and in distress. But the circumstance didn't even bend him. He could write that psalm and declare, the angel of the Lord encampeth round about them that fear him, and delivereth them. Now, years later, blessed so much he's blind. Hear that? He flees. Won't even let Abishai cut the head off of one ignorant ranter. And when he finally comes to his senses, he didn't have a little band of snaggletooth, debt, discontent, distressed people. He got thousands ready to go with him. Yet he was still discouraged. You know, for some of you have come in faith, and yet you had more enthusiasm for the battle when you didn't have near what you have now. That's right, Ted. You better believe that's right. I'm going to hear that from some more. Can I have a witness? What I said. The self-destructive quality of having been in the way so long. Some about spiritual fixes that deadens the capacity to enjoy them. Do you realize how profound what I just said was? Huh? Some of you heathen in here know how hard it was to duplicate the first fix. I don't know. I just been told. Some of you spiritual journeymen have been delivered by God so many times, you're stale. Can I have a witness? There's God. Back here, all he had done was come in from tending the sheep and splashity splash splash, oil all over his body, and he's suddenly the king. Some of you turned me on, splashity splash splash, and all hell went wrong. We didn't bother. He saw the angel of the Lord camped round about. more than a match for everything. And the angel of the Lord brought him to here. How many of you thought you wouldn't make it? I've asked you this about every other Sunday for the last 12 years. Let's try it again now. How many of you thought you wouldn't make it sometime during the last 12 years? How many of you made it? But God's ways, as I preached last Sunday, are to lead you into another testing field. And this great man fled. But where'd he go? Mahanaim. Now, what is so significant about that? Go to Genesis 31. Page 37. Jacob, chosen of God before he came out of the womb. God's choice. And because God made that choice in the womb before he ever saw the light of day, a struggle engenders. Think of it. I'm telling you that the minute God chooses you, you're going to have problems, friend. God chose Jacob, saying in the New Testament, Jacob I loved, Esau I hated, and they struggled in the womb. Now Jacob, wanting God's will, connived to get it, had to flee his brother Esau, having cheated him out of the birthright, even though God would have ultimately have given it to Jacob. He goes to his uncle Laban, cheats his uncle Laban. And you talk about a fight. You cheat a cheater. And Jacob cheated his cheating uncle Laban. See, Laban's the one, he worked 7 years for Rachel and went to bed that night and got up as Leah. Candles didn't work that night or something. Now he cheats Laban. Laban says, you cheated me. And he's coming back home laden with much prosperity of goods. And he receives the message, Esau is meeting him. Chapter 32. He knows that Esau is coming to kill him. Jacob went on his way, and the angels of God met him. And when Jacob saw them, he said, this is God's host. And he called the name of that place Mahanaim. Now, most of you will have in your Bible a number by that word Mahanaim that leads you to the central margin where it is translated. How many have that? And the translation will probably read much like this. Two camps, or two hosts. Two camps. Suddenly, Jacob, still conniving, right down to the wire, because he sent some one direction with his goods and some another direction with his goods, just in case Esau couldn't be won over. He'd have a hard time getting all of his goods in one place. Then he decides to call on God. After he's got everything in place, then he's going to ask God for a little help. And sure enough, God meets him there, and the angelic host appears. And he names the place Mahanaim. And he knows. You know the story. It goes on. And it was a warm greeting, welcome between him and Esau. God took care of the problem. After Jacob came to know that he wasn't traveling alone, and as he encamped himself in the human sphere, there was another camp alongside. You follow me? Here's what I get out of David, and this is the message. worn out by blessing, pummeled by the years, with that fresh, young vision that had let him so quickly see through the veil of time to the angel of the Lord camped about when he was at the cave of Adullam, to the king on the throne, having received so much, been through so much, fought so long, fought so hard, it was just a little harder to instantly see through the circumstance to that angel that was there to protect. I have failed in this message if I've not led you to the point of self-realization that all Christians on their journey come to that dull state. There is a point where the same kinds of poundings, the same kinds of experiences, there is something about it. You reach a stage, it's... You know, I've heard basketball players talk. I remember one great star said it was time to quit when he just couldn't get up for the game like he used to when he first started. I'm telling you that that happens on the Christian journey. There is a time where you just can't seem to get up for the battle. And I'm telling you, that's David. And many times it happens when you're at this state, up there on the throne. I don't care how hard it is to get up for the battle. That basketball player, if he couldn't eat, find a job, or do anything else, he'd get up for the basketball game. Something about being put by God in a place where you have no option. You can do it. And there are just a lot of you who have never been able to stay up here on this throne. You've had to have everything taken away from you. You're back down here looking at the snaggletooths. Or you can get it up again. David wasn't there yet. Mahanaim with Barzillai, the Gileadite, and those others to help him was a far cry from the cave of Adullam. And the thousands that he could number and put captains over was a far cry from that band of distressed, discontented, and debtors, the cave of Adullam. He had more to go with and less energy to go with it. You understand? Are you in that state? I don't want you to backslide. I don't want to backslide. I'm telling you, it's a lot easier to sit here on the throne and polish your righteous fingernails than it is to be surrounded with that which you need to be delivered from and see the angel of the Lord encamped round about. Furthermore, sit here on the throne, get righteous enough, who in the hell needs an angel? Are you reading me at all?
Yes,
how then did David make it? When that fresh youth view that always saw the angel in spite of the circumstance began to be dimmed, either through the prosperity of blessing or the constancy of pummeling, or the reality of the loved one turning on him, whatever it was that clouded the angel. He knew where to go to get the view back. That's the message. When you have lost the view, at least you better remember where to go to get it. That's the message. Mahanaim, through the years and the centuries, in that promised land, after Egypt and back, through the wars of Joshua, up until the kingdom of David, everyone who ever heard of that place called Mahanaim were brought to face with the reality, there is always two camps. The seen ones and the unseen ones. And that which makes us different is we know and fear and rely on and trust in the unseen one. Say what you will about David. There were 100 cities he could flee to. He went to the one whose very name forced the memory. Mayanaim. When you are facing that which will annihilate, God's children can have two camps. And what's in your camp ain't enough. But the other camp assures the victory. See, what's that got to do with us? Why do you think I tell you to come to the king's house? I ain't going to ever tell you again. I've been catering to you as long as I'm going to cater to you. Here goes this crazy sound. You keep your hands in your pocket up there. I say you don't have to come to king's house wanting to get to heaven. You come to keep your pastor from backsliding. The hell you don't. This is your mayonnaise. This is your reminder point. This is where you get that fresh tuning on your focus meter that there is another source of strength that we can rely on in faith. Well, you better keep me here. As you may nail, every year you take a new fix. You give the first fruits. And the rest of the year, your enemies better look out for the one they can't see. Huh? Yeah. Say what you will about David, it's the first sermon I've ever finished. When whatever it was, it caused him to lose that instant ability to freshly reach out and take the hand of the angel of the Lord and not let any circumstance defeat him, he knew where to go to get it back. And I'm telling you, he got it back. He not only got the angel of the Lord, he got Barzillai and all those other people. There's something about Mayanaim. It attracts the right people. I'm done. I'm finished. Now, what does this message mean? Get your little old discouraged buns down here every Sunday. That's one lesson. Lesson two. You get your TV set focused for a trip to Mayanaim every week. You got that? You don't leave this building today without ensuring the angel in front of you by doing it God's way and giving the first fruits. I like the way the story ends. I'm going out here with visions of my enemies hanging by the hair of their head and somebody meaner than me cutting their frickin' head off as they pass by. Now, faith ensures the victory. Cheer up, saints. It's going to get worse for our enemies when they discover the angel we have alongside. The angel of the Lord encampeth round about those that fear him and delivereth them. We're going to be delivered, friends, into something else we need to be delivered from. But we're going to be delivered. If God be for us, who can be against us? See you at 2 o'clock.